From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com, you're listening to the Brian and Vinny Show with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny V.
And Craig. It's Brian and Vinny Show, everybody. It is September 16, 2014. Figure4Online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. What an exciting show we've got for you tonight. We've got Vinny here as always. Craig is here as well. It is a free show. It's hard to believe all of this stuff we're giving away for free on this program here today. Shocking, actually. We've got full reviews of Raw, which was just a god-awful show.
That's true.
As well as the Fall Brawl 1995 War Games main event. I did watch a good portion of Ric Flair versus Arn Anderson. We watched the Gary Spivey skit. Craig didn't watch it. Oh, Craig, you idiot. That may have been the best thing we watched all week.
In his defense, I almost missed it because I didn't see it at first. And then, so I was looking for a Paul Orndorff match. I didn't realize it was just an angle. And then I thought it was not, I didn't see it on the show, so I thought it like happened on Saturday night. Only like 2 hours before I left did I realize I could watch this, and so I went back and did.
Were you unaware, Craig, or how did you miss this?
I was unaware.
What? Why are you looking at me?
Whose job is it to tell Craig what to watch?
Well, see, you gave that job to me, and then it was...
I took it away from you.
You took it away from me.
Yeah.
What if I found it on YouTube?
So...
Why don't you do that, Vinny?
Because...
If you took it away from me, then it should have been, oh, I don't know, maybe your job.
Why don't you find it on YouTube, Vinny, and show it to Craig? Because I've got some other important things I got to go through it so he can watch it. You don't even necessarily have to hear it, Craig. Watching it will give you 80% of what we're going to talk about here today.
All right.
With no audio whatsoever. We've also got Nitro number 3. WCW Monday Nitro number 3. It is shout out time. I've got a whole bunch of shout outs we're going to sprinkle through this show. There's a lot of thumping going on over there.
Trying to figure out the best way to put my laptop where Craig can watch it.
Well, it's a laptop, so it should be rather mobile.
Good call.
And we've also got, as promised, the Jay Lethal commercial from Ring of Honor. I have got the audio of it. For those of you that cannot get Ring of Honor and heard us raving about this commercial, maybe the greatest commercial that I've ever seen, we're going to play that audio here on the show.
By the way.
Yes.
Watching Paul Orndorff throw his tantrum is actually significantly better muted. It's just a silent lunatic.
But the audio is just so funny. We'll get to that. Don't ruin it yet, Vinny.
All right.
I got to say one thing here at the top of the thing. I want to thank everybody listening to this right now, and particularly those who have donated to Whitney's Whale Scout campaign. On Sunday, if you recall, I told everybody that I was going to tell them how they could improve this show if they think that they could do a better job. And I hinted that I would tell you all how to do that here on Tuesday. Now, the problem is, to make a long story short, Whitney is doing an Indiegogo campaign to raise money for Whale Scout. And I'm trying to keep this very serious as Craig is over there howling at what he's seeing. Is this not the best, Craig?
It's just ridiculous.
You can only imagine.
I'll answer that question. No, Brian, it is not the best.
It's the greatest.
It's something.
All right. So listen, Whitney is doing a fundraiser for her nonprofit, Whale Scout. And so she spent a lot of time and effort starting this Indiegogo campaign. And she set the goal at $2,000. And so we were trying to think of different perks to offer people in order to try to get to the $2,000 within 20 days, which is the time limit that she spent. So there's a bunch of whale-related stuff as well. And she said, what would you like to donate for this thing here? And so among the things I donated were co-hosting spots on this program. If you would love to be a co-host on the Brian and Vinny Show, I was planning to tell everybody, you could make a $250 donation to Whitney's Indiegogo campaign, and I would give you a co-host spot on this program. You could do a full show, choose the day, It can be a Tuesday with me and Vinny and Craig. It can be Thursday with Granny. Whatever day you want. I was auctioning off a co-host spot in this program.
Can I make a bid so I can take a day off?
I made two of them available at $250. And before I even had a chance to plug it on this program, they're both gone. So, huge thank you. She started her thing yesterday. It was the $2,000 was the goal. It is currently at $1,890. So now we're working on her stretch goal. She's got a lot of other things, including finishing the paperwork for the 501c3, which is how you become a legal nonprofit, and the lawyer fees and everything. Very, very expensive. So I don't want to deter anybody from donating. If there's stuff on here that you'd like, please continue to donate. And I was told by her that every Indiegogo has at least one crazy perk where if you happen to be Bill Gates and you've got a lot of money, there's always like one perk that pays for the entire thing.
All right.
And so I was like, okay, well, what can I do? So the $2,000 perk, if anybody out there is crazy enough to want to do this, is a day here at my house, 24 hours with me doing everything that we do for this website. Now, we cannot legally offer airfare, so you have to get yourself here. You got to either fly here or drive here. If you live close by, just drive over here. But it's rise and shine. I will make you bacon and eggs in the morning. I will cook you a ribeye in the evening. You get to watch all of the shows with me. You get to do the show live here in studio. You get to go to jiu-jitsu class and grapple with Wang. Anything you could possibly want to do in my life, you can do. A day with me at the Empire. Only $2,000. Zero of one claimed. So if you'd like to pick that one up, there's one left in 19 days. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for doing it. No, I do not think that a day with me is worth $2,000.
I can verify that, by the way. Actually,
I should pay you to spend a day with me.
See.
But realistically, if you want to do it, it's available there. And I would also like to send a big shout out. I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty sure that somebody did the $100 perk of a private jiu-jitsu class with me. And I have not 100% confirmed this, but I'm 99% sure it's Mexican Seafood was one of the people that got that. And I'm pretty sure he lives in New York. So I have no idea how he's going to redeem this, but he's got 18 months. So that's one of the perks as well. And if you've got a little lady at home, there's all sorts of cool stuff. There's a Whales and Friends ruffle apron, which Whitney's mom is making, which is awesome. There's a logo mug. There's all sorts of stuff. And I'm even doing a $50 signed copies of Figure 4 issue number 1 and 1,000. I think about 30 people have issue number 1. So you can be, person number 32 or whatever the number is. But that's available as well. So anyway, if you want to donate, just go to whalescout.org. And all the information is up there about how to get to our Indiegogo campaign. You can just Google Whale Scout. It's up there as well. So anyway, thanks, everybody. Very much appreciated. And feel free to donate if you would like. And no, Vinny, you cannot have a day off.
Damn it.
Actually, if you donate $250, I'll give you a day off for every $250 you donate.
Yay.
Now he's strongly considering this. Craig.
Briefly.
I'll give you the Thursday Brian and Vinny show off if you donate $250.
This seems counterproductive.
That sounds like the kind of guy I am.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get on with the show here. Vinny, why don't we just get Raw over with because the show sucks so fucking much, and then we'll get going with the rest of the stuff here.
This was a terrible show that made me angry watching it. Over with Paul Heyman in the ring. One of the very few highlights was when he did his imitation of John Cena's music. If it's been 24 hours now. If there's not a YouTube version of John Cena coming out to Paul Heyman doing his song, I'll be angry.
I'm shocked. I haven't gotten one yet.
So, Cena wanted to know where Lesnar was. Heyman says plane was delayed. Cena then, basically, long story short, said that he was going to give Paul Heyman until halftime, which he clarified was when this show was halfway done. And either Lesnar would show up or Cena would kick Heyman's ass. And he grabbed Heyman in a headlock and dragged him to the back.
You know what's funny is he was actually talking about halftime at the football game.
I'm sure he was.
Because that's when they did it.
Yeah.
What a stupid idea.
It's a horrible idea.
So now every week you guys can all just watch football. And during halftime you can see the big angle on Raw.
Yeah. And they're letting you know this.
We should only watch the halftime part and just forget everything else.
I'm so down with that.
I'm very tempted after this show here.
So they're telling you to skip Raw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make sure you watch the football game. But when you're not watching the football game, come back and watch Raw just for a couple minutes.
They're outright telling you. That's almost what they're saying. These exact words, you all should turn the channel for about 90 minutes.
Well, it's not so much that as it's they're just admitting that people would rather watch football. But if you are going to watch football, at least come back during halftime.
I see.
It's stupid.
Yeah. So they went to break. When they came back, Cena was still dragging Heyman around, threw him into a dressing room, ordered Kali to stand in front of the door, spoke to him in Punjabi, and Kali bellowed, "I got it."
Well, first he spoke in English.
Yeah.
But Kali didn't get that.
No.
So then Cena spoke Punjabi.
Yes.
And then he got it.
So Kali apparently had no plans for the next hour or two and was perfectly fine.
Fuck, Kali hasn't been on the show in 3 months and he was wandering around backstage with all of his gear on.
You should have at least got the man a chair.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, true story. When I went down for the network thing, they had Kali there because he's a giant. Mm-hmm. Oh, the man, the absolute misery. Mm-hmm. This poor guy just having to stand up.
I completely believe that.
Oh, this just sucked.
Yeah. Chris Jericho wrestled Kane. I literally watched this and Nitro back to back. And all I could focus on is how the production values have actually gotten significantly worse in the past 2 decades.
In what way?
In that it used to be that they had multiple cameras at Nitro, obviously. But the basic idea was just to let you watch a wrestling match. They had a hard camera. They had a camera on the floor that you used once in a while. But basically, they just stood back and got out of the way. WWE has so many camera switches and so many extreme close-ups and so many zoom-ins and then zoom-back-outs and then zoom-back-in. It's completely annoying.
You know, I agree with you 95% of the time, but I actually wanted to bring something up here on this show. When they had Brock Lesnar come out and him and John Cena got into their brawl, John Cena is so slow. And he goes to attack Brock Lesnar, and he's going to throw him into the post. And they were doing the rapid camera switches and zooming in and out. And it finally hit me that it's a way to add movement to what would otherwise be a very, very slow, boring, violent attack. You know what I mean? Like, if you'd been sitting in the front row watching John Cena go after Brock Lesnar, it would have been at glacial speed. And so they try to trick you with the quick zooms and the cuts to make it seem like it's way more lively than it actually is.
I see.
Yeah. God, John Cena's slow. That's the only thing that saved that brawl was all of the switches and zooms.
I don't think parts of it was saved. We'll get to that. So that was mostly what I focused on here. I noticed there was blood on Kane, and I thought Jericho had potatoed him, and I later learned it was the other way around, and Jericho was bleeding on him. So they wrestled for a long time, and there was an exposed turnbuckle, and Jericho managed to avoid it 3 or 4 times, and then, oh, the irony, Kane went into it, and Jericho pinned him with a roll-up.
I loved when Kane tried a slingshot.
Yes.
Slingshot. Kane! Well,
the best is right before that. The ref, after about 15 minutes, notices, hey, there's no pad there. And he points. And Kane has him in slingshot position. And he turns to the ref and just says, move. Ref obeyed.
Yeah, this was very boring.
Two things. I think it's time for Kane to maybe hang up the boots. He just doesn't move like he used to.
Like he used to?
Or like he should.
Well, then he should have retired in about 1995.
Also, I really hate the spot where somebody does a splash off the top rope, or in this case, a quebrada, and somehow Kane's powerful arm stops gravity.
Yes.
And he hits him. He gets him in a choke slam position off of the quebrada. I hate that spot.
Yeah.
It's dumb.
So if you're ever working with Craig, don't call that spot.
Or call it so he's forced to do it. That's even better.
There's two ways to look at that.
Get your hand up.
Paul Heyman was on his phone backstage. Apparently, there was a cameraman locked in the dressing room, too. Brock was not answering. They promised that tonight Mark Henry would rally in America, rally America, and in hindsight, he failed. They had videos. I thought there was going to be like all night long. Here's a bunch of other Olympians wishing Mark Henry luck. They had one guy, a high jumper, like Jim Brunzel. Renee interviewed Roman Reigns. His promo was so boring that I didn't even realize I hadn't written anything down until the next match started. So I don't know what he said, and I don't care.
He was going to beat the man until his knuckles were bloody.
Yeah,
that was very important because it set up a god-awful fucking interview later.
It set up a low point.
Oh, God. This was such a bad show.
It really was.
This is a go-home show for the first pay-per-view after the most important renewal period in their history.
And when it was done, the fans wanted to go home.
Yeah.
Jack Swagger wrestled Bo Dallas. This did nothing to turn my mood around. Wrestled for like an hour, and then suddenly Swagger tapped him out clean with the ankle lock.
This is a big feud.
So Jack's gimmick is that he's a failure, and now Bo just tapped out clean to him. Sucks to be Bo Dallas. And then Swagger started waving the American flag, and for a brief moment I thought perhaps he can team with Mark Henry. Then I realized what a horrible idea that is.
Maybe the heat is that he tells everyone else to Bo leave, but then always loses.
Sure.
That'll get a guy over.
It was odd seeing Bo get so much offense. He took, like, most of the match. It was kind of...
Did him a world of good.
I know it did. I know it did. And sorry.
That was funny.
The boot that Swagger threw that kicked him right in the face.
Oh, that was great.
There
that
was a point
awesome.
Where you kicked Bo right in the face.
In the old days, if you forgot what you were doing, you grabbed a headlock. In a Jack Swagger match, you forget what you're doing, he kicks you as hard as he can right in the face.
Yes.
That's all he can think
that
of.
That really summarizes his career.
Yeah.
They did a network plug. Of all the things on the network, what was the first thing they mentioned as a reason for you to plug down your $9.99 a month?
A Slam City Marathon.
Correct. Yeah. They did then mention some Bret Hart specials and the pay-per-view, so it wasn't a complete waste of time.
I just love their... I mean, Jesus, God. The way they're trying to promote this network is like... When I think of how I would promote the network... They're doing, like, everything I wouldn't do and nothing that I would do. So I guess we'll find out. If it ends up a big success, then I'm a complete idiot as a business person. But it seems to me like it's not a knockdown, drag-out success at this point. So maybe they should think of some alternative ways to promote the network. Like building up your pay-per-views better, for example. And putting more shows on it.
Yeah. Nikki Bella and Paige versus Brie Bella and AJ. Confession. I love Bree's new music. It's classic, cheesy, mid-90s club music, and I love it. So, they beat up Bree for a while. Nobody cared, and why would they? What has AJ and Bree done in the past month that was worth cheering for? And the finish was, she crawled for the corner to tag out, Bree did, but then Nikki yanked AJ off the apron, and Paige won with a rampage. Complete burial!
My wife asked me, Has Nikki ever had a problem with her top? And I said, whatever do you mean, dear? She said, you know, has she ever fallen out of it? I said, actually, yes. To which she replied, oh.
I love how you guys discuss these situations.
Why?
Winnie walked in during this match and just goes, are her tits bigger?
Yeah, we're not you guys.
I guess not. But it was actually a really good question because... They look gigantic.
Right.
Hmm.
I was a fan.
Maybe that's why she's doing all those squats with John Cena. She thickens up her ass to offset the increasing size of her boobs.
I don't know. What? Don't look at me, Vince.
I got nothing to say. So, then Nikki hit Brie with shock treatment, and then Paige and AJ did laps around the ring skipping. And I just thought to myself, what am I watching? A champion and her challenger... Trying to determine who can skip better. I describe this feud as hot garbage shoved down my throat. Bray Wyatt promo. I believe he said that he would beat the Big Show.
He talked about David and Goliath. You didn't catch up?
I think you're the only person on the planet that was paying attention to this Bray Wyatt
promo. He was comparing himself to David and the Big Show to Goliath.
I even asked Dave Meltzer what he was talking about, and Dave just mumbled something about tigers.
There was no tigers in this.
What? I don't know what idiot.
Maybe he was watching the baseball game. Heyman tried to leave the room. He begged Kali as pathetically as possible for permission to go make a phone call and then come back. And I couldn't put my finger on which Muppet Heyman was imitating, but he was definitely being a Muppet, and I mean that as the highest possible praise. And Kali said no, and he broke the phone and then noted it had no reception. This led to Big Show versus Bray Wyatt. Big Show was watching the Kali shenanigans on the screen and laughing.
This match is a kickoff to a feud between these two men. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Yes.
I can't.
Yes. They had a long chin lock.
As I noted on Twitter, there were more chin locks on the show than there were references to 999, which has got to be some sort of record. There may have been a chin lock in every match.
Probably. So, the worst thing is, Show hit the final cut, a move I've not seen in a while, and then the Wyatts attacked for the DQ. And so, Big Show chokeslammed both the Giants, but Wyatt was in his rocking chair and laughing, and Big Show was seething. And that's how they're going to build up Big Show for a feud with Brock Lesnar. He's going to feud with Bray Wyatt first.
No, they're not doing Brock and...
Oh, they dumped that now?
Well, it's a long story.
I don't care.
It was... Well, I should explain it because Bix felt really bad. Somebody had emailed something to Bix, which was tongue-in-cheek. Ah. And sometimes when you're sent an email...
Yes.
It doesn't... You read it differently than it's intended.
I understand.
So, yes, there will not be a Brock-Big Show feud. But there will be a Big Show-Bray Wyatt feud. Because God knows... That'll blow people's minds. Imagine the promos by Bray Wyatt on the Big Show.
It'll be just like every other promo he's ever
done. Be talking about elephants.
Sheamus and the Usos versus Gold and Stardust and Cesaro.
I know you love that team name.
I'm just doing what I'm told. That's how they're apparently supposed to be known. First thing I wrote, match went on for a while. Here is where I noted the show was half over and we had not seen Brock Lesnar yet, and they were in fact telling you to turn the channel and come back later. Nobody gave a flying fuck about this match, least of all the announcers, who began to tell jokes about Teddy Long and President Taft.
Like, how could you... I'm not a fan of the announcers or anything, but how could you possibly care when doing commentary?
I suppose that's true, too.
It's impossible.
It's the same dudes having the same matches every show, and none of it matters.
I mean, the only way to have fun is to just be like a complete idiot. It's the only way to entertain yourself doing commentary for something like this.
Yeah, I can't fathom. This is the point where, and we're only halfway through the show, I cannot fathom anyone choosing to watch this show if they were not being paid. Financial compensation was the only thing that made sense.
Like nothing, most jobs.
I suppose that's true.
Including the one you're doing now.
But this is not supposed to be... Their product is not supposed to be a chore to get through.
Well,
it's supposed to be entertaining and engrossing. It is just gross.
I mean, seriously, this is not even like, I don't mean to disparage WWE in any way, but I'm talking anything in the world. How can you make anything in the world interesting for 3 hours on a weekly basis?
Five. You gotta do SmackDown 2 with the same people.
That's right. Like anything in the world. Name one thing that every single solitary week you could watch 5 hours of it and be entertained like the whole time. I can't think of anything. I know you're thinking porn, Craig, but it doesn't work that way.
I was not thinking that.
There's nothing. Nothing in this world.
I was going to make a joke about it. But
it's not football, Vinny. You're not watching football intently the entire time.
And normally it year-round.
Exactly. And people go and they get snacks and you talk and you kind of get interested during a big play. But there's sure. A lot of downtime.
Yeah, that's true. So they had a very boring match. It did pick up when Sheamus got a hot tag. Bunch of big moves at the end, and then one of the Usos pinned Cesaro with a top rope splash. So to build two championship matches, they had Champion A pin the challenger for Title B.
Yes. I was so pissed off. I didn't write notes for SmackDown, but there was another match where they did something like this, where it's like there are five possible finishes, or however many, that in some way would build up the pay-per-view. And on a boring show like this, you chose the one finish that doesn't do a goddamn thing for anybody. The babyface tag team champions pinned the challenger for the U.S. title. What? Why?
I don't know.
I preferred boring.
So does this mean Cesaro's winning at Night of Champions?
I presume it means that Cesaro is winning and the Usos are losing. But that's not how you should book wrestling, based on who's going to win or lose. The idea is that you fucking write your show in a way that will make people want to see the event.
All right. I'll pick up the pace here. Renee interviewed Randy Orton. He said he would beat up Jericho.
Nitro was so much better than this.
Oh, God, yes. And it was the worst of the Nitros we've watched. Cena went to retrieve Heyman from the room, dragged him to the ring, cut a promo. He ordered Heyman to produce Lesnar, and then Heyman went all Darth Vader and tried to get him to join the dark side. Said he could bring out Cena's hatred, and if Cena would hit him, then that would prove he was a bully, and then he could be a Paul Heyman guy. It was like,
he was playing the Emperor.
Yeah, it was entertaining, but why would Paul Heyman want John Cena to turn heel?
Well, I think he wants him to join the troop, and so then he would have control over Cena and Lesnar.
I see.
Yeah.
Cena said Heyman deserved to have his face rearranged more than anyone else on the planet, which proves John Cena does not read newspapers. And then eventually Cena admitted he had been bluffing to get Lesnar to appear. Said Heyman was an old, washed-up has-been who was not worth dirtying his hands over. And then Heyman said mean things about his mom, so Cena shoved him. Thank the good Lord above, Brock Lesnar's music played. We've said it before, it's the best song in wrestling ever. Everyone jumps up and says, oh no! So, came out, circled the ring for a while, pulled Heyman to the back, teased fighting a couple times and didn't deliver, and then finally hit the ring. German suplexed Cena immediately. I laughed very hard. And then Cena rallied, knocked him out of the ring, and they brawled. And you were talking about how they used camera effects to try to mask how slow John Cena was.
Indeed.
Ain't nothing they could do to hide these punches.
Well,
he may have been brawling underwater.
Yeah.
So all I can say is I've seen his punches from the stand-up for months. They're awful. His punches on the ground are no better. I hope he's a very good grappler. Because
history has shown he's really not.
Yeah. So he's in trouble. Geeks ran in to pull Cena off. Fans were chanting to let them fight. Just going crazy for the whole segment, really. And that was that. And Heyman and Lesnar left. And this is like the only good thing on the entire show.
Dude, low praise, but it was the best thing on the show.
This is the only thing they did on this show to hype the quote-unquote pay-per-view on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, everything else was garbage.
And I don't know. I mean, it was great. But, like, was it that great that you're really excited for the match now?
No.
I'm not largely no because I figure that. I figure that Brock is losing, and so I'm actually less interested now.
Mm. Yeah, this show without
you're
Brock
kidding,
Lesnar.
Right?
No, he's probably, I would bet you 95% he's losing.
20-1?
Mm. That's disheartening.
Why take those odds?
Why? Why?
That's how I explained it on Sunday, Craig. Think about this for a moment. If at the end of the pay-per-view, John Cena is the champion, you're going to really look back at SummerSlam and the absolute destruction of John Cena, and you're going to say to yourself, why didn't I know that this was going to happen? Of course John Cena was going to get his win back. Right?
Yeah, but that negates the beating and the specialness.
Not
of-
to mention, well, they already negated that when he was back the next week. But also, Mr. Seth Rollins here losing clean to Roman Reigns for no good reason.
Yeah, why is that on the pay-per-view?
To me, means he's probably... I would bet that Seth Rollins somehow doesn't even wrestle Roman Reigns on the pay-per-view. Like, maybe Seth comes out and then Dean returns and beats up Seth and there's no match. Which, of course, makes you think that Seth is done for the night. And then after John Cena wins, Lesnar destroys him and Rollins cashes in and he's the champion.
That's too soon.
Well, I'm not booking the thing.
I'm just telling you.
I know. I agree 100%, but...
All right, enough of this Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins talk. Let's discuss Cameron versus Naomi.
Oh, let's.
How long has Cameron been associated with this company?
Well, not quite as long as Rosa Mendez.
Well, that's true. But long enough to know, you would think, that when you are pinning someone, by rule, they must be face up. And if she has not picked that up in the 2 or 3 years that she has been earning a paycheck, it's time to cut your losses.
Okay.
It's a very basic tenet.
I think that she did her split drop and was just like momentarily clueless and thought that the girl was on her back. Okay. That's what I think happened. Just like her brain stopped working for a split second.
Well, that part we agree on.
Okay. Dave thinks it was a planned spot, which I don't think. Although, to be fair, I have been told that there are girls in developmental who, when they're doing their practice matches, have gone for pins when their opponent is on their stomach.
I can believe that.
That's how little they know about wrestling.
I can believe that.
And so it is possible this was spoofing them. But I think her brain just short-circuited.
You really think they trust Naomi or Cameron with a spot like that?
They don't have to trust her. They have to trust Naomi to just stay on her stomach. I don't know, but the match sucked and no one cared.
That is also true.
Which should tell you how over Total Divas was the night before when they broke up to set up this match.
Longest 4 minutes of the show.
This is only 4 minutes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm. So it was all, there was a lot of chin locks in this one as well when Cameron wasn't forgetting how to pin people. And the crowd got bored at chanting for JBL and Lawler and went forever. And finally, Naomi hit a sunset flip into a wacky submission for the win. Then it felt like a lot longer than 4 minutes, but she basically got beat up for all 4 minutes. And as soon as she got the win, she just jumped up smiling and dancing.
Yeah.
This is where I decided I hate wrestling.
It sucked. No two ways about it.
God, this is an awful show. Just look at, there's more to come.
How about the Miz and Sandow replay from SmackDown?
It was the exact same match we've already seen with the exact same people doing the exact same gimmick. But you know what? I think of the full-timers in the roster, I think this is their best feud. Because everything else sucks even worse.
Man, that was the most in-depth burial of this program I've ever heard. When this is the best thing.
At least their entrances are funny. The matches are adequate.
I got to say one thing. I mentioned this last night, but I got to talk more about it. Truth wearing Ziggler's tights is a big mistake. Because Truth is one of those guys, I think he's like 42 now, and he doesn't look 42, especially when you put him in like, you know, he wears those pants, he wears like kind of little baggy jeans, and so, you know, you can hide certain things when you wear an outfit like that. When he puts on those Ziggler tights, which are too small for him, his gut sticks out so far, and it's so unflattering, and he's out there shaking his ass. Oh, God, this poor guy.
I'll have to check that out next time.
Oh, it's impossible to miss. It's impossible to miss, Vinny.
So they're doing Miz versus Dolph at the pay-per-view, with Dolph defending the title. And to build this up, Dolph pinned Miz clean.
Yeah, of course.
Not that anyone was going to buy the pay-per-view to see Miz and Dolph anyway, but Jesus.
Yeah. Well, probably, I just, you know, that's how they do things. Miz will probably win. Yippee.
The best thing about this match was the very last part. And Miz is against the dashboards, hand on his neck, splayed out. And right next to him, the camera pans back, and there's Sandow in the exact same position.
Sandow's
the
best.
See, he's the best thing on the show.
Yeah. You may be right. Tell me about this Tom Phillips thing.
Hmm?
Oh, jeez.
How fitting that Seth was being interviewed by Tom Phillips.
How is that fitting?
Just because it completed the suckiness of this segment.
Well, if you didn't watch the show, they attempted to kill Seth Rollins' career in one promo. He said that Roman Reigns was an ape, and he did an impression of an ape.
A Neanderthal.
Yeah. And he walked around on his knuckles to try and make Roman Reigns look stupid. It did not work. It humiliated Rollins and humiliated me. I was embarrassed watching this. Then he began to talk about rhinoceroses for a while.
Yeah.
It was like
what
they
in
had
the hell was the show?
It was like they had a bet. Can we make Seth Rollins the dorkiest guy on this show? Who thinks they can do it? And somebody came up with this idea, and they won the bet. It's terrible.
Why would anyone watch the show?
Hey, I don't know, but keep going. Let's get it over with.
I need some ideas. All right. Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins. Okay, the match itself, frankly, was fine. It was a perfectly fine little Raw main event. So they're doing a one-on-one match with no stips and nothing on the line at the pay-per-view. And to build it up, they're having a one-on-one match with no stips and nothing on the line at Raw.
That's why I'm telling you they're probably not going to have a match at the pay-per-view.
So okay. Either the fans are all smart enough to figure that out.
No.
Or they're not. Either way, you know what? Forget. Regardless of what happens in the pay-per-view now, this match meant nothing.
Yes.
Right.
It was a waste of time. I don't care if it was fun. It was fun. but it accomplished nothing. Then Reigns won the spear, and Michael called it a big victory. I wanted to slap him.
Wow.
Shut up, Michael. It's not a big win. It didn't matter. It didn't mean shit. God, this show sucked.
Wow. I mean, technically, it was a big win.
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't. Three possibilities of the pay-per-view. Either Roman wins, in which case that's a bigger win than this one, so it doesn't matter. Seth wins, which wipes out the effect of this one, so it's not big at all. Or I guess if the match, I suppose if the match doesn't happen, then this is his win. So I guess in that universe, then yes.
Because then if Seth becomes the champion, this is a big win because Roman pinned Seth Rollins, who is now the champion.
So Roman's going to chase until WrestleMania.
Hey, you just, I don't know what the hell they're going to do, but you could do something like that if you wanted to. How they're going to last from now until WrestleMania without having them have a match is beyond me.
I actually wrote down, I don't even understand what they're doing anymore.
Well, I don't either.
That's fair.
No one does.
So here we are, 3+ hours into the Go Home Raw, and the main event segment is Mark Henry's goofy rally for America.
Yes.
He came out to no reaction.
Shockingly.
Yep. He attempted to get sympathy, talking about how hard it was to forfeit in the Olympics, and the crowd was so sympathetic, they began chanting what at him. There were a couple of USA chants. And then Michael Cole began to discuss Lana's Twitter account, and I could take no more. I skipped ahead a lot. Lana came out. She ran her mouth for a while. Lana said, quote, Americans were getting dumber. And I thought, yes, the ones watching this show are in fact getting dumber. So thank heaven Rusev attacked and there was some action.
Thank heaven.
And they brawled for a bit.
There's Gary Spivey when I need him.
And Mark Henry hit Prince Albert's Baldo bomb, which is a new one. And then he waved the flag.
See, no newsworthy.
Shut up. Don't watch Raw, everybody. Do not watch Raw.
This was a very, very bad edition of the show.
I can't believe it was worse
than the one 2 weeks ago.
It may have been.
Which I thought was the worst ride scene maybe in years.
Yeah.
This is very bad show.
I can't believe they ended with this. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around
it. Because they're probably going with Cena versus Rusev. And so Rusev is now in a main event segment on Raw. Dude, I called that a long time ago, but I thought they'd do it at WrestleMania.
They're going to have really bad matches.
Dude, I texted somebody last night who usually has a grasp on how things are going there. And I said, this show sucks. And they said, prepare for 5 more weeks of this. I don't know what that means, but apparently don't be excited for the next 5 weeks of Raw. It'll be holding pattern bullshit until I guess the Survivor Series or something. Vinny, this will cheer you up.
Listen up, wrestling fans.
Yeah.
If knee or back pain has you down for the count, then kick out by giving the expert staff at Health Alert Hotline a call now. And through Medicare, you may be eligible for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, just like the one that I'm wearing now. So whether in or outside of the ring, don't spend your life suffering in agony. Fight back with a pain-saving knee or back brace. Call 1-800-471-2270 now.
That's a great commercial.
He wears braces when I watch Raw.
It's even better when you watch it with him actually cutting the promo. He's very, very wild. Apparently he's done a few of these, and they're all great. But this was the only one that I've seen so far. All right, let me do a couple of shout-outs, and we'll do Fall Brawl. This year, Brian, I've been a happy subscriber for 4 years now. I've never cashed in my shout-out because really I was not sure what to use it for. I'm not looking to promote anything. I'd use it to tell you what a great job you do. But of course, you already know that. I would like to use my shout-out for a very simple reason. I would like to wish my best friend, Joe, a happy birthday. Joe is one of the kindest human beings you will meet. He has a childlike wonder for pro wrestling.
That won't last.
I was going to say, I wonder if that's true after Raw. He recently lost over 60 pounds in 4 months using DDP yoga.
Wow.
I could not be more proud of him. It would mean the world to me if you, Vinny, and Craig could help in wishing Joe a happy 28th birthday. So, Joe, happy 28th birthday.
Happy birthday, Joe.
That's pretty good.
All right, I'm looking back over that Raw from, I think it's the right one.
That was Will, by the way, from Medford.
Real quick, Straw had the long segment with everyone saying they wanted a title match and Hunter booked a 6-man. That was long and boring. Sheamus and Dolph versus Cesaro and Miz. I just wrote, what a clown show. We got the Growing Up Bella. That was terrible.
Oh, God. Yep, that takes it down a lot.
We had the worst match I've ever seen in my entire life, the Women's Six-Man. We got Sho and Henry versus the Wyatts ended in a DQ.
All right, that one was worse.
I don't know.
I'm remembering now.
I don't know. I'm going back over this. I think this one this week was worse.
This one was just boring. That one was bad.
Yeah, but... But
this one was pretty bad, too, now, I think. They both sucked. Who cares?
They were certainly bad television shows.
You guys are trying to figure out which turd in the toilet bowl was the best.
Which one sucked? Yeah, exactly.
There's the Bo Dallas segment with people who were embarrassed about Jack Swagger losing. There was a guy holding up a sign saying, "This sucks." There was all the women came out and said they wanted a title match. All right, this is awful, but I'm pretty sure the show we just watched was worse.
Well, you may be right.
Yeah.
All right, a shout out here from Benjamin. By the way, if you sign up, that's the gimmick. If you sign up to the website, just email me your receipt and a 150-word shout-out, and I will read it on the next free Brian and Vinny show. This person here says, I've been a wrestling fan for a while now. The first wrestling show I remember watching was the World Class episode when Gino Hernandez blinded Chris Adams.
Wow.
I became sucked in for life when Paul Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan. I became a fan for life when Paul Orndorff met Gary Spivey, but we'll get to that in a second. I stumbled across the Brian and Vinny show on YouTube. I knew Brian's name from Death of WCW, which remains my favorite wrestling book. I pre-ordered the hardcover edition for the 10th anniversary. I enjoy the Brian and Vinny reviews for TNA, became a member of the site in May. I used my wife's credit card without her knowledge, so I signed up for recurring 3-month options since she would notice a bigger purchase. Please give a shout out to my wife for being supportive of me even without realizing it. Keep up the great work, Benjamin Boring Esquire. Mrs. Boring, thank you for supporting your husband's love of wrestling. All right, one more, then we'll do a Fall Brawl. I have been subscribed for the past 2 years now consistently. I've never cashed in a shout-out, so here we go. I enjoy listening to the shows, interacting with the shows. I'm the guy that won the Joel Osteen book from Granny. My girlfriend enjoyed it. I called into After Dark a few times. I have participated in too many silly topics on the board. Still, I don't know how I would wake up without a new F4W show in my life. They make my days better. That is from Taylor. Thank you, Taylor. And thank you, WCW, for Fall Brawl. Go ahead, Vinny.
Okay. So we watched, did not watch the entire show. We watched two things you're supposed to. I also, someone suggested I take 5 minutes and watch the Cobra Craig Pittman segment, which was just goofy and bad, really.
Did you know that Craig Pittman earlier that same year had done Valet Tudo Japan 95.
Yeah, we watched that.
And went to the second round.
Yeah, we watched that movie.
What? It's true, Craig.
Oh, my God.
If you guys have the DVD Choke, which is a classic, you can watch Craig Pittman fighting in Valet Tudo 95. True story. April 1995. And he won with an armbar here, so he learned something in Japan.
With an armbar. All right, so the other thing we watched was Paul Orndorff and his career resurgence.
So, what a resurgence.
So Paul was on a losing streak. And after a loss to Randy Savage, he lost his damn mind. And he went in the dressing room and he threw a tantrum, punched the wall, kicking chairs, screaming. And they kept editing clips, putting in camera cuts to make it seem like it was a much longer tantrum. They cut down to TV
Yeah,
time.
It wasn't one long tantrum. They showed 95 clips of him hitting various things, including his own head on the mirror.
Yes, yes. And like he would calm down, then get angry again, went off for a while. And finally, he got it out of his system, apparently. And he was still down, but he was getting undressed and he was unlacing his boots. And then the door to the dressing room opened. And Paul Orndorff looked up. And in walked
a chia pet.
I still don't know.
It was like he was wearing a loofah on his head. And he had a Elvis one-piece jumpsuit on.
Yeah, a white jumpsuit. The pants are just pants. The shirt had like
frills?
Tassels, frills.
Sure.
Carpeting? I don't know.
The loofah on his head.
The head.
It was a chia pet.
It was like they took a perfectly... like a basketball-sized styrofoam ball.
Yes.
And cut out room for his head and stuck it on there and said, "That's your wig."
The best one I saw was somebody who would Photoshop the Death Star onto his head.
And I was trying to figure out, is that supposed to be his hair? Is it supposed to be styrofoam? What were they going for?
I can answer this question because I remember Gary Spivey. But when I went back and watched this, like one of those things where you watch it years later and you're really like gobsmacked. Like, what? What? So the story is that when he was young, he was in a rock band.
Ah.
And he played the bass.
Don't say ah, that doesn't make any sense.
And he claimed that when he played bass, he dyed his hair gray. So he's claiming that this is, in fact, his real hair.
But that's impossible.
Apparently, he went into, like, sales, and he would run around with the hair and a jumpsuit. And apparently, he was a great salesman.
So, wait, this was a real person?
This is a real guy. He's still around. Gary Spivey, the psychic. He's on radio shows everywhere to this fucking day.
Oh, my God, he is.
Yes.
Oh, that's that guy.
That's the guy.
No way.
This is a real guy.
I thought WCW made him up.
No. Oh, no. He had a podcast this week. He has a weekly podcast where he takes calls and gives people psychic advice. He's still around. And he still looks exactly the same thanks to his hair.
I think he got a new, it's cleaner and whiter.
Well, it's real hair, so just, I'm sure, turned white. Craig is just amazed right now.
Well, I'm picturing his voice, and he sounds like a cartoon character.
Oh, yeah.
And I've heard him call in on the morning show that I listen to, but they have since banned him.
What?
Because he's such a shill. And he doesn't answer any questions, so they just banned him from the morning show they listen to.
You got to be kidding me. That's unfair.
This link says, Gary Spivey, psychic fraud, but genuine Q-tip.
I was trying to find one of his podcasts, but it wouldn't play. But on YouTube, okay, I got something even better. This is the Spivey Family Jam Session. You're actually going to be able to hear him play his guitar. Vinny, come here real quick.
One, two, three, four.
Craig, you're too far away. He's playing the bass. Oh, yeah, I thought Vinny was going to just keep walking to the door.
No, we're done talking about Raw. I'm okay now.
He's a pretty goddamn good guitar player.
Plays the bass.
That's still a guitar, you idiot.
No, it's completely different, Brian.
Bass, guitar.
Oh, jeez.
Thank you.
You
go
know
on,
nothing
Vinny.
About music.
I play the guitar.
Go get your guitar and play something.
Go on, Vinny.
Go get your bass and play guitar.
It's untuned.
I bet.
This guy looks like a giant eraser.
Yes.
All right. So the
like
point
a dandelion. You know the ones you blow.
Excuse me.
The dandies you blow. You know.
No, I have no idea what you're talking
go
about.
Go on, Vinny.
So this guy walked in, a guy I had not seen before or since and thought they made up, but apparently he's a real person. But Orndorff recognized him and said in as wooden a manner as possible.
He recognized him. Like it might have been someone else.
I didn't recognize him.
You know Gary Spivey.
I didn't know that. I thought they made him up for the purpose of the skit.
No.
I didn't realize this is an actual human being, and now
no.
I don't even know what to do.
This was a big catch for WCW.
If you see this guy once, you're going to recognize him for the rest of your life.
Well, that's true. So Paul Orndorff said, I'll do this imitation as best I can. Gary Spivey? From the Psychic Companions Network? He had like six words and forgot part of them. So, Gary Spivey didn't really do anything psychic here. He just gave him a pep talk. Tried to boost his confidence, tell him he really was wonderful. People call him Mr. Wonderful. In order to flex, he said, you know what? I am wonderful. And he admired his own abs and his pecs and his one bicep and kissed his fists. He was happy. So that was it. That's the rebirth of Paul Orndorff.
The best part was when it's over, they go back to the announcers. And Bobby Heenan sold this so hard. My God, it's a rebirth for Mr. Wonderful. I need Gary Spivey in my life. It's amazing. Oh, I miss these days.
Oh, I do too. All right. Skipped ahead to the main event. I did catch just the end of Ric Flair and Arn Anderson.
It was great.
I'm sure it was. The finish was great just because watching Ric Flair and Brian Pillman trade punches. Punches used to look like guys were actually hitting each other.
Well, not only that, but like it was so realistic. Like Pillman comes down and the referee is distracted. And Flair just like, he looks at Pillman and he just goes, I apologize, Granny, but this is what Ric Flair said. Get the fuck out of here. And Pillman just kept standing there. So he like slapped Flair on the back and Flair turns around and looks at him. And I think Flair punched him first and Pillman sold it big. And then Pillman gave him one punch and Flair sold it big. And then he gave him an NZ. It looked so like, I don't know how to explain this, but it looked real. It looked like real pro wrestling. Not like the pro wrestling you see today, which is just fake pro wrestling.
Yeah.
It looked like real pro wrestling. Like, pro wrestling were real. This looked like it. I think it was great.
According to Gary Spivey's Wikipedia page, he is known for his unique hair, which appears to be a dense silver afro or afro wig.
Or afro wig. Yeah. It may be real, they're saying.
Yeah. So, first we got a Kevin Sullivan video package. He was locked in the cage, being a weirdo devil worshiper with his Boston accent, which just made the whole thing funny. And he smashed a Hulk Hogan toy with a shovel and he cackled.
Why can't a guy from Boston be a devil worshiper?
I don't know. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I'm prejudging. But when I think of devil worship, I don't think Boston.
You think the dirty South.
Basically, I'm like the middle of nowhere Texas, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Sure, yeah.
So then the Giant used a monster truck to run over Hulk Hogan's Harley.
What?
You didn't watch this part?
Yeah, it happened.
Oh, I mean, I saw it on Nitro. So the Nitro one was a replay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
It actually happened on main event right before the pay-per-view.
I see. I didn't start watching until the match started.
Yeah. The I think the clip on Nitro was actually longer. One of them was longer.
It was much better, I can tell you that much. We'll get to that.
All right. So Tony and Bobby bickered for a while. Then we got another War Games video package.
Recapping, God, I skipped all of this.
Recapping. I'm very happy I didn't. It was just so amazing. They recapped the bit where Hulk Hogan was magically transported to the Dungeon's Lair, and he said he could feel Andre's aura when the Giant was around.
There are no Hulkamaniacs here.
There's no Hulkamaniacs here. I believe this isn't even hot or something.
It's so much better than this Bella's shit.
Oh, God, yes. Jesus, yes.
There's no Hulkamaniacs here.
They had clips of Hogan, Sting, and Savage at an actual military installation somewhere, posing with very large guns and running from random explosions. I actually remember this because Vader left, or as they said here, he was AWOL. But there was a bit where they were all up like a scaffold or something, and somebody threw a grenade and everyone shouted, "Take cover!" And everyone started to run. And I remember Vader actually doing a moonsault off the scaffold. That's how you take cover when a grenade's in the area. Then we got a promo. How many times, just on this show alone, have I watched a promo and said he would win, or I don't know what he said, and it was a waste of time? This promo of Hulk Hogan and his team was amazing. It's one of those, three men, you could not take your eyes off the screen for a moment because you didn't want to miss anything they said or did. So Hogan's going off about how he and his crew, and they all had camo gear and face paint on. And Hulk said they had drank several gallons of Agent Orange.
Bad idea.
They were now impervious to pain.
If they lived, he's right.
I don't know what got into Randy Savage and Sting, but they're usually maniacs anyway, but they were on another planet of lunacy. And Lex was trying to keep up, but he could not. He was not as crazy as these men, frankly. And he vowed he was on their side. There's no dissension in their ranks. And Hulk just kept on raving, and his partners were running around and screaming and flexing and hollering. Wrestling used to be so much fun.
Yes. Men were allowed to be themselves.
Men were allowed to be entertaining.
Yes.
It wasn't read this script about fucking Neanderthals.
Some geek writer is going to make a character
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, it was, you have 30 seconds. Entertain me. Go. So the match was War Games, the Dungeon of Doom versus the Hulkamaniacs.
What a battle.
Three screens of graphics explaining the rules. It's really not that complicated. Although I did like where they said, official time is kept at ringside. Head referee has final say in war games.
We'll get to that, by the way.
So Michael Buffer was doing full melodramatic introductions, calling Shark the Maneater. And the heels all came out. The baby faces all came out up at the top of the stage, and they all moved down to different sides of the big cage. So the match began. And this match, per rule, was guaranteed to go at least 17 minutes.
Yes.
It was the absolute shortest it could go. So Hulk, to start the match, chose for his team Sting. And the dungeon chose, of all people, the Shark.
Of course.
Let's take our 500-pound man and make him in there the longest.
You know what's funny is, like, there are guys much bigger than the Shark nowadays, but my God, he looked big.
He was awfully big.
He was huge.
I don't know who's that much bigger than him. Big Show, obviously.
Big Show. Mark Henry probably is maybe a little bit bigger.
He's bigger than the Wyatts.
Brodus Clay.
He's gone.
But my God, he's big. By the way, he just debuted for Impact tonight.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's his name?
I have no idea.
I can't think of a good Brodus Clay name.
I was trying to think of something funny, but yeah, I couldn't either.
Frankly, NXT is better for making fun of guys with bad names.
Brodus Putty. That's what they called him.
So, Shark and Sting wrestled for 5 minutes. And
please tell me the best spot.
I'd be happy to. So, Sting, as you all know, is a great athlete. And so they did a spot where Shark is in one ring and Sting was in the other. Uh-huh. And Sting did a big running dive over both sets of ropes onto the Shark and wiped him out.
Yes. I love how it's set up, too.
Yeah, they demonstrated Sting did it first. So then Shark cut him off. And Shark attempted to do the same thing, but there was a flaw in his plan. Gravity. So he jumped. He came up yards short.
Before you even say what happened, let's just, for the listeners, there's two rings next to each other.
Ropes and everything.
And Shark's idea was, I'm going to run from one ring and do a tope over both sets of ropes and fly so far past them that I hit Sting with my head in the other ring.
You're talking a good 4 feet apart. And
Uso dive.
Yeah. And remember, if you've not seen this man, he was like 6'6" and 500 pounds. He was massive. So, he hits the ropes. He's coming back the other way. And he jumps with all the might his fins can generate.
Which ain't much.
No.
We found out.
An actual Shark could actually jump much higher than this. But he ended up stretched out over the ropes between the two rings with his arms hanging off into one ring and his feet dangling off in the other.
Yeah.
And he was stuck and trapped, and Sting started to kick him. Okay, listen to me. I need to get a promoter's license and buy two rings in a cage so that I can do this spot. This looks awesome.
It was amazing as the husband of the director of Whale Scout, who has been out on many whale watching expeditions. What he did here was breach.
He did.
It's exactly what he did.
I loved it when Heenan says, "It looks like the Shark swallowed a canoe."
Yes.
He also noted, I don't think I would have started with the big man. So this 5 minute opening period, Shark barely survived. If it had gone 6 minutes, I don't know what would have happened. But point is, by the end, Sting had overtaken him and actually put him in the Scorpion, his finisher.
Yes.
And just as the clock expired, Zodiac hit the ring. And
the fucking Zodiac.
He gets in the ring and he's waving his hands above his head. Yes. in ape formation. I don't know what you'd call it. And he's just running circles.
Dude,
ridiculous.
I don't consider like Eva Marie and who's the other horrible one? Rosa Mendez. I don't consider these girls like real wrestlers.
Sure.
Nor should you.
But as far as like real legit wrestlers who like had a career and made their money as wrestlers.
Gotcha.
Zodiac's got to be the worst ever.
Ed Leslie was not very good.
He was so hilariously hideous in this match. Yes. Horrible beyond comprehension for someone who had done this for so long.
And had success.
He looked like, they used to call him Dizzy Hogan. Now I know why.
Yeah.
He looked perpetually dizzy.
So Sting fought him off for a while, but there was two of them and one of him, and eventually he was overwhelmed. And I need to make this key point. Once they cut him off and beat him up 2-on-1, That was it. Sting for the next like 30 minutes and 30 seconds. I believe at one point he was able to shoulder block Zodiac down. Other than that, they beat him up. He could not fight 2 minutes on his own. He needed help.
So if this was TNA, what would happen is the good guys would get the man advantage.
Of course.
Sure.
They fucked it up for years. You know what's even better is the next
Everyone's
guy.
Everyone's fucked it up for years.
The next guy in was Randy Savage.
Yes.
And so even in TNA when they did it right, like the babyface would come in and he'd just like run wild. And then a heel would come in and they'd get heat. And then, well, in this match, because Sting had been beaten so badly 2-on-1, when Savage hit the ring, Sting was unable to help him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so Savage only ran wild briefly before they got the heat on him as well. It was constant heat on the baby faces.
Yes.
Not to mention Ming reached underneath the cage.
That's right.
And pulled Savage down and was working over his leg.
He was trying to
outside.
Yank his hip out of the socket, they claim.
That's right.
Yes. It was. I do want to know who built this cage, but...
Not my dad.
That is a nitpick.
I just want you to know. Yeah.
That is a nitpick. So... By the end, they are the baby faces. They were fighting for themselves, but then Kamala came in. It was 3-on-2. And what followed for the next 2 minutes was heels clubbing the baby faces with the forearms. I think Shark threw a knee at one point, but seriously, for 2 minutes, that was it. Luger hit the ring. Everyone cheered because it was evening the odds. He ran wild, place exploded, was totally into him. And then he went to hit, I believe, Zodiac, but whoever it was ducked. He ducks and he hit Savage from behind. And Savage was pissed. Savage went after Luger, keeping in mind they'd already established Savage didn't trust Luger. So they're brawling. Sting goes to try to make it up. And this, of course, left them vulnerable to attack. And then in came the Monster Ming.
Mm.
And these men were fucked. And for 2 minutes, they were destroyed, savaged, brutalized, conquered.
You know the best part of Luger's being beaten up was? He gets knocked down by Brutus, the barber, and the barber goes to pick him up, and you can see Luger calling a spot. Mm-hmm. Do you know what spot he called?
Hit me.
Rip my shirt off. Died. And Brutus tore his shirt off to expose his physique.
Yeah.
The only I was at a house show in Tacoma, and the first match was Goldust against Brian Pillman. And Goldust had Pillman in the corner. He was up on the second rope, raining down punches. And I heard Pillman call the spot, kiss me. And then Goldust did.
Well, there you go. Works every time.
It does. It does. So all hope was lost. Evil was going to triumph. And who should come in to save the day? But of course, Hulk Hogan to light our darkest hour. And he ran in, like Han Solo coming in the Millennium Falcon to shoot Darth Vader out of the sky. He threw powder in all the heels' faces.
What a dick. First thing he does is cheat.
Oh, yes. There was, to give Zodiac credit, there was a fun bit where he was trapped in between the rings.
Yes.
And Hogan would punch him, and he just kind of ping-pong back and forth for a while.
Yes. Yeah.
That was fun.
He knew how to make his money.
Sure, sure.
Terrible worker, but smart guy.
Hogan was running wild with back and chest rakes. He was actually a great teammate. Remember all those great Shield matches where even though it was even numbers, they always had the man advantage?
Yes.
That's what Hogan was doing here. Moving around the rings to make sure that everyone who needed help got it. So they fought for a while, and then Hogan was after about, oh, I don't know, 5 minutes maybe, probably less than that. Hulk isolated Zodiac in one of the cages and put him in the camel clutch, and the Zodiac's gimmick is that he says yes, and so he quit.
Well, I think, no, you almost had it right.
All right.
His gimmick is he says yes, no.
Yes.
And so when the referee asked him if he would submit, he kept saying yes, no, which is why the referee's like, no.
See.
And then he finally, at first I was like, this is the worst referee I've ever seen. This is the finish. Just ring the fucking bell. Why do you keep going back and forth? And then I realized Zodiac's yes, no gimmick.
So yeah,
that was supposed to be funny.
Yeah. So Hulk's team won. And per the stips, that meant Hulk got 5 minutes in the cage with Kevin Sullivan. Sullivan tried to run away. They eventually got him back in there. So Hulk's beating him up, and they actually beat him up outside the cage for a while, and then beat him up back in the cage. Then who should come out to make the save but the Giant?
Andor the Gaint.
Andor.
As he was known back in the day.
Andor the Gaint. And comes out, throws the ref aside, opens the door, vaults over the ropes, leaps from cage to cage, and attacks Hogan. no sells some punches, cranks his neck, leaves him laying with a broken neck, Hulkamania dead forever. Remember when we reviewed NXT TakeOver and talked about how Charlotte carried herself like a star already?
Yes.
Big Show, for the moment he ever appeared on television, carried himself like the biggest star on the show.
I thought that he blew me away, actually.
His?
With how poised he was.
Yes. His size, obviously. His athleticism, his presence.
He'd never had a single match in his whole life.
Yeah. And here he was on live pay-per-view in front of, I don't know, 20,000 people?
He was great.
He was awesome.
Best part about this is I was watching this and Whitney's here, and she's a huge Big Show fan, and he starts coming down the aisle, and she goes, "Oh my God,
yeah,
is that?" And I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "Daniel Bryan?"
Jeez.
So no, this is 1995. That's the Big Show. Yeah.
Did she recognize him then?
She did after that.
Okay.
She's like, he's so skinny.
He was skinny.
He was pretty skinny back then.
He was skinny. So the lesson here, listen, the action in this match ranged from, generally speaking, below average to out and out terrible. But because they followed the basic script, for the most part, it was a really, really good and really, really fun match. And this is like, remember, I talked about how I felt ripped off by flying to Miami to watch Daniel Bryan wrestle and getting an 18-second match.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt the universe paid me back by having the moment in Seattle when they wouldn't stop cheering for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was kind of like that to me. All those shitty War Games matches I had to watch in TNA, and we watched a few in other indies, and they all sucked too. This match, as bad as it was great. I would probably...
I'm glad you prefaced it by saying as bad as it was. Yes,
it was... The action was... sloppy. The move sets were short. But God, this was a great match. There was a story. The baby faces were outnumbered all the time. They had to fight like hell and, yes, even cut corners and cheat to win. But in the end, they survived. And then an even bigger, scarier bad guy showed up. Oh, well, this is awesome. Oh, I love this so much.
At the end of the day, the important thing is it was fun.
Yes.
This was fun. Wrestling is supposed to be fun.
Amen.
And Raw Monday just was not fun. And Impact, there have been years at a time where it was not fun. I don't care about all the rest of this stuff. It should be fun. This was fun. All right, we're going to do Nitro here in a moment. Let me finish off these shout-outs here. Jay says, I've been a subscriber since July. I love the site, especially the Brian Vinny shows. I actually read the amazing newsletters. I'd like to think I got you one more subscriber, my buddy Benson. Tell your two buddies that the Seahawks are whack. And the forehead will soon reign supreme. Oh, man, if you could see Craig's face right now. Not happy. Colm here says, hi, Brian, Vinny, potentially Craig, maybe Granny, hopefully Wang. I signed up on the 10th of August for a month. When it ran out, I signed up for a full year because I enjoyed the month so much. If you could shout me out, it would be great. I'm not too sure how this works, but if I can bring some attention to my Twitter, @Colm_Ahern, or my video game reviews, my video game videos, actually, on God is a Geek's YouTube channel. It'd be wonderful. Again, not sure if this will be included in a shout-out, but you can't blame a guy for trying after getting a year-long membership. Happy, from a very happy Irish listener, thank you very much for all the hard work. That's right, Vinny Irish. Excellent work, gentlemen. I also think it goes without saying we need more Wang. Wang and Granny on their own show would be comedy gold. That is from Colm. Joining the group of people that pick two names randomly and ask to have a show with them.
That's the way it goes, yes.
God only knows why. Scott here says, this evening in Manchester, a shelter for abused and abandoned dogs was subject to an arson attack. At the moment of writing, 43 dogs lost their lives over an act of absolute horror. Two residents, Jason Dyer and Dean Rostock, acted upon themselves to rescue 20 dogs in an act of heroism. As both yourself and Vinny are pet owners yourselves, having spoken about your cats at length on the Brian and Vinny show, I'm sure that both of you and the listeners are all gigantic animal lovers and can sympathize with this atrocious act. Would you please make mention of the below Just Giving pages where people can donate to the Manchester Dogs Home and help with the plight of the animals that must be terrified at the moment? Any help or publicity they could give would be a tremendous help in an act to restore faith in mankind. You can check out justgiving.com/dogshome or justgiving.com/dogshomefire. Thank you and appreciate it. It is Scott Lloyd, the Broken Bear, from Manchester, England. And finally here, Adam just says, I love my subscription. Thanks, guys, for doing a great job. He's from Zeeland, Michigan. Thanks, everybody, for the shout-outs. Of course, if you sign up, send me a receipt and a 150-word shout-out, and I will read it in 2 weeks here on this very show. Nitro, Vinny.
Nitro. So the announcers were running down the show, and they said there was an emergency in the back. Got to Gene Oakland. There was an ambulance backing up, and Gene was saying that Hulk Hogan had left the pay-per-view in an ambulance. And who popped out but Kevin Sullivan and the Giant? Gene could never just call him the Giant. He had to say the Big Giant. I believe that is redundant. So Giant got a promo, and it was goofy and melodramatic, but it was the middle of a goofy melodramatic angle, and it fit in fine.
And look at how new he was.
He was brand new to the business. He was so ridiculously talented.
Clearly a guy that watched and enjoyed wrestling as a child.
Yeah. So it was supposed to say the American Males versus the Blue Bloods.
Don't forget he mentioned that he was Andre's son.
He did, yes. American Males versus Blue Bloods. So Mongo, the show was like 5 minutes old. And it had already been at least twice he had told us to go get Grandma out of the bathroom to watch the show. First of all, I don't know why he assumed everyone's grandma was in the bathroom. But more to the point, if my grandma's in the bathroom, I'm not getting her out of the show, getting her out to watch wrestling. She can stay in there until she's done.
God, Mongo was terrible.
He really was.
You know what drove me crazy? Not only is he a bad announcer, but he would, in between shots, they would show the announcers, and he would be listening to Bischoff talk, and he would have an idea in his head. And so when he had the idea in his head, he would hand motion. Like he would throw his hand up and like he had something to say.
You raise your hand.
And he raised his hand and then Bischoff would say, we got to go to commercial. And then he would be like, shucks. I had something really intelligent.
Well, Bischoff wasn't a complete idiot then.
Right.
I got to say one thing about Bischoff. When this show opened, my God, was Eric Bischoff excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was so excited at the start of every Nitro, like it was the most exciting thing in the world. And you would be a fool if you thought about changing the channel.
Well, yes. This was his baby.
Man, you watch any of these wrestling shows nowadays, and they got their script to read, what's yes. coming up. It's just another show. Man, with Bischoff, it was like, this is the biggest day of my life. Impact I'm doing right now.
Eric Bischoff in the early days of Nitro was miles and miles ahead of every announcer working in every company right now.
Just his excitement level.
Yes.
He couldn't call a move to save his life.
I don't care.
Vince couldn't either.
He was there to make it exciting and, what's the word? Fun!
Well, he did.
So Harlem Heat came out and kicked the Blue Bloods' ass. I guess it started backstage. They explained they had just won the titles. They deserved to be on TV and they were willing to give the Males a title shot right now. So they were fighting heel champions. It was Harlem Heat and the American Males. They started brawling, and they went to settle down into a regular tag match. And, you know, the ref is supposed to, you know, get guys out of the ring and stuff. But this ref was Nick Patrick, and he sucks. So he just stood in the corner, and the wrestlers had to break it up themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so bad. Booker T used an axe kick, and Eric Bischoff referenced K1.
Why not?
Strange.
You see a lot of axe kicks in K1.
So Sherry tried to interfere, but Colonel Parker came out to get her, and they began to make out.
She swooned into his arms.
And who wouldn't?
Tennessee Stud.
Yes. Well, yeah. If you're all read Foley's book, you know why. And Booker T tried to pump handle, but Bagwell fell on top of him, and the ref counted 3, and the American Males won the belts. And then something amazing happened. They showed replays. Many of them in slow motion from various angles. So everyone knew what had happened at the end. I love the show. Also, when I was 20, when this aired, I thought Scotty Riggs was horrible. Scotty Riggs right now would be above average on Raw.
Oh, yeah. You know, what I couldn't believe was that the American Males are coming down to the ring and all the girls are screaming. So they got some shots of some of the girls in the crowd. And it's like, does wrestling always have to be like 10 years behind the time in terms of styles? I did not know that there were so many mullets on both the males and the females in 1995 in wrestling. Remember it took Shawn Michaels to like 1996 to grow the rest of his hair out?
Yeah.
To fill in his mullet?
Yes.
Astonishing.
Believe it or not, Booker T was a heck of a wrestler.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, he was. They all were.
And massively powerful. The Buff mistimed a powerbomb spot and jumped way too early. And Booker T just muscled him up.
Oh, yeah.
It was massively impressive. It was
four big jacked up dudes.
He was moving in this match. He looked like a million bucks.
Yeah, he was really, really good. Gene brought Flair out for a promo. Flair said Arn had broken the code of the pay-per-view. So it was okay to feud amongst themselves and settle things like men. But Arn had gone outside the family to bring in Brian Pillman. Said tonight he's going to chop Pillman so hard that Boomer Esiason would feel it in Long Island. He's going to kick Arn's ass too.
Brian Boomer Esiason was a quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals at the time.
Yes, he
thank you.
I believe it was a teammate of Pillman's, or they actually may have been.
Didn't later. Matter because the Flair promo was so great.
Yeah. Paul Orndorff versus Johnny B. Badd.
My God, Mr. Wonderful's music.
They do, in fact, call him Mr. Wonderful. Look that up, Ryan.
And Christopher Rice's gimmick.
Yeah.
Okay.
He didn't have Chris Rice's gimmick. He had the mirror.
Yeah.
Checking himself out constantly. And,
all right, I got it.
I found it. All right.
All right. Hopefully this is the correct one right here.
I can't think of any other Paul Orndorff songs.
Well, I mean, they've got several here that claim to be his music. So, let's try this one right here. Paul Orndorff's WCW music.
It's inspiring.
Sure, this isn't the music from the Psychic Spy Network or whatever that Gary Spivey was a part of.
Wonderful, they call him Mr. Wonderful. You know he is so wonderful.
And there's a picture of him looking into a mirror right here.
Yeah. We gotta hear the woman's voice.
Wonderful, wonderful. They call him he's just so wonderful. You know he is so wonderful.
What did Bobby Heenan ask?
And he knows it too.
And he knows it too. That's the best song ever.
Oh my God.
That may have just topped the Mountie as my favorite theme of all time.
I gotta play this every time I come on the show.
I'd carry it, play it around everywhere I went.
All right, go on, Vinny.
Oh, God. All right. So
I'm gonna loop this as you talk about this match.
Johnny B. Badd came out with his mullet, which was unreal. So they're having a match, and it was going along fine until the point where it was not going along fine anymore. Orndorff's outside, and Johnny wants to hit a dive. So he preps and he preps and he preps, but Orndorff won't turn around. And Orndorff stumbles to the other side of the ring, so Badd moves over to hit him on that side. But Orndorff still won't turn around, so Orndorff moves to a third side of the ring. And finally, Badd goes to throw a kick through the ropes, and it misses by like a foot, and Orndorff sells it anyway. It's quite bad.
I love the big splash that Paul Orndorff tried. It's the worst ever.
They took turns trying pile drivers in the ring, and finally Orndorff sat down on a sunset flip attempt and got the win.
Credit Gary Spivey!
It was not good. Should I keep going, or?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Randy Savage is doing some bench presses on the beach.
Oh, God, we need the song for this. This segment here.
First of all, maybe I'm wrong. Did they say when this happened? Because they had done the pay-per-view the night before. I don't know where the pay-per-view was, but it was at night.
It must have been that morning.
And this show was also at night in it was Tennessee or somewhere in the South.
They have a lot of beaches in Tennessee, do they?
So you're telling me it's specifically the Baywatch girls?
Well, yeah, they said it was on the set of Baywatch.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Now, did you recognize these Baywatch girls, Vinny?
Not one of them.
So they were. I want to know if they were the actual girls in the show, because I am not certain that they were all of legal age. And when Flair showed up, I was almost certain.
Well, they were some fine-looking young women. So, yes, Randy Savage, apparently
they put a bench in the middle of the sand.
You're getting ahead of me.
Sorry.
They did War Games the night before. Mm-hmm. And then perhaps on a red-eye flight, Randy Savage and his friends flew to California so he could do bench presses in the sand. And then they finished this and then all flew back to the South to do Nitro. This seems inefficient. So he's doing bench presses on the beach. And the girls are there watching him in their super hot red Baywatch swimsuits. And suddenly outruns Kevin Sullivan in David Hasselhoff's jacket.
He's in disguise.
And it worked.
Spit an image if you...
Yeah. He wasn't rolling on the floor eating a cheeseburger?
No. We're singing in German. He pushed the weights down on Savage's chest and beat him up for a bit. And the girls were all scared. And finally, who should arrive but the other Baywatch guys and Ric Flair, who actually I can imagine flying to the West Coast to hang out with women and then flying back to Nitro. That part makes sense.
Ric Flair wearing pink boots and his tights.
Pink trunks and then like a tank top.
And a tank top.
Yeah.
Like, you don't wear a tank top with a beach, Flair? Come on. I love the idea that Randy Savage wanted to do some bench press. First off, I don't know if you guys have ever walked in the sand, but imagine setting up a bench on the sand. Yes. How unstable that would be.
Yes.
And then telling him to load 295 pounds on it, which was how much he was supposedly benching here. This is the stupidest idea ever. He's benching, and all the girls around going, big chest, Randy, big chest. Or maybe that was whoever was spotting him. Somebody was telling him big chest as he's benching.
Sounds like Ryback.
Yeah, and then up came Hasselhoff to push it down on his neck. Couldn't even believe that.
As a large man, I've tried sitting in chairs on the beach.
It doesn't work.
No, not really.
No. You breach.
Right.
Yeah. I love it. Flair kept calling him Devil. Like, Flair couldn't remember Sullivan's name. He just knew he was the Devil.
I just don't know why you wear wrestling boots to the beach.
Because he's Ric Flair.
What else is he going to wear?
He jumped. He went. So, listen, I've traveled with Buddy Wayne.
Hold on.
So, when he's wearing his trunks, pumping gas.
So
he went from the War Games to his Learjet in his gear. Uh-huh. He took the Learjet to the beach, and then he just walked out like that and was tanning.
So Flair takes off his boots. He's got a huge tan line. Mid-calf.
Yes.
He doesn't ever take off his boots. It don't matter.
I see.
Yeah. God, wrestling was great back then.
It was.
On that note, Randy Savage came out for a promo.
Great promo.
I can't tell you what has happened to this business. What has happened to promos?
I've told you, no one's allowed to be themselves anymore. Listen, every single person that wants to get into wrestling has got to be a little crazy, right?
Yes.
Normal people don't decide they want to be pro wrestlers. No. And if they do, they don't get very far. So to become a success in wrestling, you have to be a little bit crazy. Just let all these crazy fuckers be themselves. Quit trying to create characters for them and writing a script. Can you imagine if Randy Savage came up now and they told him to stop talking like that and read this script?
I don't even want to think about it.
You're going to be an accountant.
It's too depressing. So Savage here, first he said, Ric Flair, thanks, but no thanks. Stay out of my business. I will take care of Kevin Sullivan by myself. Hogan, selling this beating from the Giant, here's a novel idea. He wasn't there.
No.
He missed a show.
His career might be over. He's not on the show the next night.
They promised an update on Saturday night. So he said Hulk was at SCOM. Hulk was at home watching.
Eating a scone.
Well, he said he was watching, not on television, on his video scope.
What?
That's what he said.
Who said that?
Savage. Said Hulk was watching at home on his video scope. He said Hulk.
A word I've never heard.
He said he loved Hulk, but Hulk was a terrible judge of character. And if you're familiar with Hulk Hogan's career, true fact.
Especially his wife.
Well, yeah, good point. So he said Luger had wiped him out with a cheap shot. Jimmy Hart and Sting and tried to stick up for Luger, but they were his best friends. They couldn't be trusted. From this point, you were either with Randy or you were against him. He said Sting, Hart, and Luger were going to join the Dungeon of Doom. Finally, Luger came out to defend himself. He made it one sentence before losing his train of thought, and Savage had to tell him to speak. So Luger said Savage was jealous, and he wanted the championship too. Savage said, sure I do, but the bottom line is you cheap-shotted me. Let's fight right now. And Gene tried to make peace. And Savage was daring Luger to fight and slapped him once or twice, and they had a stare down as they went to commercial.
I do miss the good old days where, like, you aspired to be champion because if you were lucky, maybe someday you'd be the world champion. Unlike today where everybody gets the belt.
Yeah. The air, the angle where the giant ran over Hulk Hogan's motorcycle.
So awesome.
It was, why don't you go ahead?
Well, it was great because, like, nowadays it would just be you do this goofy skit, somebody would run over something. Hogan was like, first off, he's on his motorcycle, and he's surrounded by, like, real Americans.
Hold on. Here's what happened. Gene said, and I quote, "Legions of fans mobbing Hulk Hogan."
Yes.
I counted 12.
Well, there, that's right. But, you know, it was a narrow camera shot. But there's like, they're like real Americans, like, you know, apple pie. I think one guy even had a hard hat on.
Nice.
But Hogan's there, and the key is, it's not just like Giant did something dastardly. But before the Giant attacks, Hogan is on his bike, and he's talking about how he rode here on Black Beauty. Because he's named his bike.
Yes.
He loves his bike so much, he's given it his name. It's his Black Beauty. And of course, suddenly the monster, the Giant, drives by in a monster truck, and he tries to fucking kill everyone.
That is true.
They flee in terror as this monster truck comes tearing at them. He runs over Black Beauty, and then he begins to laugh maniacally. He's in his singlet in the monster truck.
Of course.
Laughing like a crazy man.
Again, like Buddy pumping gas in his trunks.
And then he zooms off again, setting up the monster truck challenge, where he was ultimately thrown off Cobo Hall.
That's right.
I hate to reveal spoilers. I am so excited to watch that because I don't remember why, but I never saw that pay-per-view. I never saw him go off Cobo Hall in a monster truck. I'm going to get to watch it with baby eyes, and I cannot wait. This is so campy, but so great.
Is that what you're calling your wife nowadays, by the way?
What?
Baby eyes.
I don't know. I'll try that one tonight, Craig. I'll let you know how it goes.
You do that.
Tweet it.
Sure.
Please. With a picture.
No. Text will do. Brian Pillman versus Ric Flair. As promised, they chopped the holy living piss out of each other. Bischoff plugged Mike Tenay's hotline, I believe, by saying you could call the hotline to find out who was leaving WCW. I must have misheard him.
No, he's probably talking about Vader.
That's what I thought, but God, that seems like a stupid way to plug your hotline.
Well, they probably wanted a chance to just bury him on the way out.
I see. So this match went like, 8 minutes. It was awesome. Ric Flair took 95% of it. Pillman got a couple of chops, and of course, Flair got press slammed off the top and all that. But Flair beat him up for a while and put him in the figure four, and he won.
That's right. One of about 5 wins via figure four in his career.
Yes.
It's one of the rare matches where Flair actually hit a chop off the top rope.
I couldn't believe that in his 40s, he did a double sledge off the post to the floor.
He did.
What? And he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he cuts a promo after the match. I've been chopped to hell. Brian, I know you've been chopped to hell. Craig, I assume you were.
I've chopped you to hell.
Yeah. I've seen guys with red chests and pink chests and even purple chests. Ric Flair's chest was black.
Bruised, yeah.
Yeah.
He demanded Arn Anderson come out and fight, and Arn didn't show, so Flair called him out for next week. And they plugged the Saturday show, Flair Anderson for next week, and suddenly Heenan grabs his headphones and says, "Something is going on in the back." Bischoff says, "Yeah," and he keeps on plugging next week's show, and they never went to the back.
Well, you know,
live TV,
things happen in the back all the time.
We'll find out next week.
So, the lineup for next week, everyone: Flair versus Arn again, Disco Inferno versus Alex Wright, a Kurosawa appearance. They called him the Japanese Warrior, and I thought he was calling him the Japanese Lawyer.
That's what he'd be nowadays.
Yes,
gotta give him a gimmick.
Also, Savage versus Sullivan and Luger versus Ming, which is a stacked show for 1 hour.
Yeah.
A very fun show. I won't lie. This is pretty forgettable.
It's forgettable, but it was fun.
It was fun.
I just love the 1 hour aspect of it.
Yeah, the 1 hour is great.
It's an easy hour to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's an easy, fun hour.
It's a well-paced hour. Nothing drags, but nothing is rushed.
It's an hour-long show, but on the network, it's 40 minutes.
Well, that
that's
too.
Right.
That helps.
Well, you know, the other thing is it's funny how as time goes by, people come up with new theories, and you forget about what used to be common sense. And a perfect example of that is this show, this Nitro. Back in the day, it was all about, you always want to leave them wanting more.
Sure.
You always want to leave them wanting more. So a one-hour show is just perfect. You give them a little bit and you leave them wanting more. So they can't wait until next week's show. Now you kill them with three straight hours. Next week, it'll be six straight hours if you count Sunday and Monday back to back. There's no such thing as leaving them wanting more.
God, no. Who could possibly want more?
No, and then when you go back and you watch something like this, it's like, I can't wait to watch Nitro Episode 4 next week. That's going to be a lot of fun. So anyway, let's finish off with a song here. You two will appreciate this. It is, it's you guys, actually. Here we go.
Flash.
Savior of the universe.
Flash.
He's saved every one of us. Flash.
Oh. Savior of the universe.
I don't know who, but someone's rolling over their grave right now.
That is the new funniest one ever. That's tremendous.
All right, everybody. We're going to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, who sent in shout-outs. We'll be back on... Actually, tomorrow. We got two shows. Yes, Craig? I can see you're waiting to say something.
Yeah, I
got to
say something. Ed is going to kill me if I do not.
Mm.
This is all him.
Spin
on
it
his,
out!
On his show, he's got Mia Yim and Leva Bates for this weekend on the Over the Top Radio.
Wow.
I know.
This is going to lead to a consensual sexual relationship between these three people?
I'm sure that's what he's looking for.
What are the chances?
Slim and none.
About that.
Slim just left town.
I was just going to make a Slim and none joke, but I'll refrain. Ed's show, everybody. Over the Top Radio, Friday. He's got some girls on it.
There
he's very excited.
Oh, he's so excited.
All right. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. Why doesn't Ed... Hey, Ed, I got an idea for you. Go to whalescout.org, and down there at the bottom, $2,000 contribution. You can spend the whole day with me and Whitney.
There you go.
That's right.
Although I'd keep him away from your wife.
Well, she's fine. She'll protect
herself.
She's
trained in jits.
That's right.
She'll choke him out.
That's right. All right, everybody, want to wrap it up. Tomorrow, Lance is going to be on and Todd.
Together?
No, but
Todd. That'd be comedy gold.
Todd will be. Yeah, let's put him two random people together. Todd and Lance show. There we go. But Todd will be on Wednesday this week. He'll be back Thursday next week. Vinny and I will be back on Thursday with Granny for that show. A lot of stuff coming up. Check it out. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Good night.
Adios.